Thank you very much for joining me. I'm Bob Franklin. The program is Like It Is. My guest today is San Mateo, California Mayor Amol Lee. She is the first Asian woman of and Jew of color to hold the office of San Mateo. And we got some work going on in both places, so our audience will forgive whatever little background surround sound noises that they may hear. But thank you for joining me, Mayor.
Thank you so much for the invitation. I'm so looking forward to our conversation.
So am I, and I really want this to be the first of many. But I'd like to maybe just kind of have our audience get a background profile of you, and I'll just read a little bit from your bio and have you pick up on it. In your bio, you grew up on welfare and in public housing, working two jobs in high school, and you said your life was saved by good policies. Would you elaborate on that, please?
Well, thank you for sharing that. And it's actually parts of my story that it took a while for me to center in my narrative of leadership. There was a lot of, you know, shame in growing up poor. But I think the more important message is the way that I was lifted by community. The opportunity for second and third chances that I got, my family got, thanks to the resources and good policy decisions of other leaders and other community members who supported those decisions, that helped get my life on track, allowed me to graduate from high school, go on to college, direct two nonprofits, and ultimately dedicate my life to public service. So I have made it my mission to give everyone that I can reach through my work the chances that I got to have a safety net, to live with dignity and a roof over their head. And those are, you know, those are the tenets of how I want to make my mark.
You mentioned shame. I'd like to maybe just talk a little bit about individuals who may presently have that shame. How does one, in your view, overcome that? And how does one overcome it to a point where it's not a negative, rather it can be a positive step moving forward?
I thank you for asking this question. It's very deep emotional work to face the reality that many people who are living in incredible states of suffering and vulnerability are also silenced through systems and also internalized oppression that keeps them quiet, keeps them out of the system, and afraid to speak up. And I think that knowing that and seeing that in my own community, I felt in many ways I had, you know, this crossroad moment that I needed to fully embrace my whole story and share my whole story of transformation and model that for other community members who might not have the same, who might not have been at the same path that I have come to, and see that that is an option, that we can use our challenges to create opportunities for ourselves, and that transforming you know, silence and suffering into collective action is really how, you know, that's the model for changing the world. That is the model for social justice. That's the path.
And I'm glad you mentioned social justice, because that'll be a point that we'll talk about a little later in the program. But in your bio, you also say that you are unapologetically and audaciously driven to protect our democracy and ensure everyone can live with dignity and have a chance to succeed. It seems as though in the political environment that we find ourselves in today, that communities are marginalized or even really pitted one against the other and treated as though they are not a part of the community. I'd like for you to speak about why community is important and why you are unabashedly and unapologetically, that's my word, a supporter of strong democracy and support of communities.
I think being a Jew and a person of color puts a lens on my perspective my people have survived mass genocide. And that the fact that Hitler came to power in a democracy is a lesson to all of us that we have an obligation to protect the health and integrity of our democracies. I know that democracies are fallible if we don't hold those lines. And so, you know, my approach to leadership has been full well knowing that, you know, this is a very finite point in time, and I don't want to leave anything on the table. Like, my metaphor is I want to leave it all on the dance floor and at night and at the end of all of this say, like, I did everything I could. I literally can't, there was nothing undone that I could have done to better serve the community. And so, you know, we all have very limited time in this world and opportunities to make huge impacts. And when we take up the charge and the responsibility of giving back to our communities, you know, that's a really profound act and practice that for me it comes from a genuine invitation. You know, it's a genuine place of inviting everyone into this work to be part of it. Because when, you know, I can see what happens when we work together and we create more caring and connected communities. And when we start to humanize each other, right? And we accept and tolerate each other's differences and even our differing perspectives. And I think in the face of modern day sort of immediate gratification and cancel culture and divisiveness that is really tearing apart the fabric of our country and democracy, where discourse has devolved incredibly and the varnish has come off in many regards, unleashing incredible hatred and racism, misogyny, and anti-Semitism. And so when we pull together and work together across different issues and bring stakeholders into, you know, a unified vision of what we want our communities to be, we fortify democracy. And that is the practice of patriotism.
Our democracy is in peril, and it's facing not so much external forces, but internal forces that are, I guess, doing the quiet things out loud.
I sadly have to agree that our democracy is in peril. And I'd say, you know, one of the greatest challenges of our times is, you know, is in the age of information that we are countering so much disinformation, right? That anyone who wants to can hold a microphone and be amplified with very few checks in terms of facts. Like the fact that alternative facts are now a catchphrase is the world that we live in, sadly. And it grossly undermines trust in legitimate institutions and our government. And there are very real forces that are actively working to undermine people's trust in government. And that in itself, I believe, is really contrary to what, you know, what we need to be an effective society and a high functioning democracy.
The trademark of being a part of democracy is the ability to vote and having free, unfettered access to voting. But there have been barriers, and there are constant barriers to voting. What's your thoughts on how those barriers get broken, and how the individuals who've been shut out of the voting process be encouraged to continue to fight and persevere to vote to be a full-fledged member of our democracy?
In San Mateo County, we were among the first to actually go to vote by mail. And so what I find very interesting about this experiment in San Mateo County and in California that has really rolled out a program through Vote by Mail that's multilingual, that many of the barriers that you see in some other states are really have been significantly reduced, if not completely eliminated. And so access to polls, polling stations, having, you know, a month to actually, you know, mail in your ballot, all of those things have significantly improved access to voting. What we're dealing with right now is really about voter engagement and voter education. And I've been working on many campaign finance reform initiatives, and actually led our city of San Mateo to launch the first campaign finance dashboard in the entire county, which makes the money and how money plays in local politics transparent and visible to the community. So you can see where money's coming from, who's supported locally by dollars, and who's not, right? And so I think that, you know, there are ways that we can build in more voter education opportunities through campaign finance reform, which is a very important tool. I think the other thing is that just the nature of how campaigns are run, it's, you know, it's about winning, and most campaign efforts are targeting already, you know, likely voters. So that's a very small fraction of the voting population. And what happens is that the low propensity, the unlikely voters, the folks that might have just registered or have not participated in past elections, are almost always left out of campaign education and outreach. And in the absence of other efforts to engage voters in a systematic and sustained way, what happens is that we're relying on candidates and special interests to do the bulk of the voter education and engagement. And so there's this really huge gap that in some cases is missing, you know, 60 to 70% of the eligible registered voters that are untouched by traditional campaign strategies. The other part that is really missing, and it was quite shocking to actually pull together new data through the AAPI County Task Force that I was helping to spearhead, is bringing everyone onto the same page to get a data analysis of API vote electoral power. And what we came to realize through an in-depth analysis was that there's 44,000 eligible unregistered voters, that's Asian Pacific Islander voters in San Mateo County alone, which is a shockingly high number of potential voters who are yet to participate in electoral politics. And when you think about how you know, the margins of victories at local elections, where one vote, seven votes can make a difference. Think about the power of 44,000 Asian Pacific Islander unregistered voters in one county, that's San Mateo County. And being the first Asian woman to ever hold this seat, you know, I feel a strong obligation to reach deeper into community and make sure that Asian communities and other underrepresented communities who are yet to actually register, who are not being touched by traditional outreach campaigns and strategies, have something to plug into, right? And that really comes down to civic engagement and civic opportunities. And I'm really happy to say that in the city of San Mateo, we actually run a civic education program called the City Services Academy. And we run it for the city, and also have a satellite program for students of our San Mateo Adult School and ESL program. So we're really taking an equity approach to making sure that there's pathways to leadership and pathways to participate in municipal governments.
I'm Bob Franklin. The program is Like It Is. My guest today is Mayor Amal Lee. She is the mayor of San Mateo, California. She's the first Asian woman and Jew of color to hold the office of mayor. And Mayor Lee, you were mentioning the 44,000 votes yet to be added to the roll of sorts. And I'm curious, part of your particular statement is that you champion San Mateo's values of inclusivity, prosperity, and resilience. On the point of inclusivity, how do you reach those individuals who are outside of, or maybe to use Ralph Ellison's word, invisible?
Well, it's going to take a yes and approach to, you know, to all of this. I think one of the strategies that we champion is connecting deeper into the community through partnerships with organizations that are trusted resources to community. And making sure that, you know, those who are invisible on the margins or have opted out, you know, because of their own personal history or culture, and feel that it's, you know, maybe, you know, there's also a really very real sense of apathy in some cases, right? That what does my vote matter? All of those perceptions and realities of distrust and lack of education and lack of belief in the system, you know, take time to change. And so my approach is very collaborative. I center, you know, working in close partnership with community. I've also been really working very closely with young people. and I run my own internship program. And my campaign, my historic election, was run thanks to the power and the vision of youth who carried me across the finish line. And it was an entirely grassroots campaign. And my, you know, my efforts since then have been to work in close partnership with young people on my, what I call my youth squad. And they run youth-led initiatives. And one of the things that we've been doing is changing representation opportunities for young people specifically. And so there's obviously, there are institutional changes that can be made to open the door to underserved and underrepresented populations. And young people, when you change the behavior of one young person and give, you know, they have their activist birthday at 16, at 14 years old, they become lifelong voters, right? And what we see, you know, in terms of behavior change and voting participation is that if you have a voter who starts voting early, they will vote for the rest of their life. Their children, their children's children, their children's children's children will end up becoming voters also. And so, you know, there has to be a multi-pronged approach in terms of changing opportunities for representation, creating and widening pathways for new leadership opportunities and representation, and also making sure that we're connecting the dots at the ground level for communities that have touch points with faith organizations, with service organizations that aren't connected civically to our systems of government, and so. Those are, I'd say, some of the key strategies that I'm employing and that I, you know, I see our city embracing and that really do need to be scaled.
The youth squad, members of the youth squad, as you referenced a few seconds ago, will be impacted down the road by climate. As climate change is impacting communities presently, how do we tell that story? How do we emphasize with greater urgency the need to address climate change and to actually start reimagining how we build, how we look at climate and its potential destructive nature when we ignore Mother Nature.
I think we all are living through the impacts of climate change. You know, there is an undeniable reality that we are all at this point experiencing mass floods. The worst every year is the worst fire that we've ever seen in history, right? We're setting new records of catastrophes. The city of San Mateo, the skies were apocalyptic orange in recent memory. And when you talk to some of the old timers who, you know, have lived in this county for generations, they themselves are saying they've never seen anything like this. And New Year's Eve, we saw a 300-year flood in the city of San Mateo that had tragic impacts to our community, including hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not, collectively millions of dollars of damages in lost wages and property damage. It really deeply impacted our ability to run services, and came, it was a very challenging time. My first act as mayor was to declare an emergency, a state of emergency, and open up our emergency operating center, and helped raise $50,000 in flood relief funds and leveraged the city of San Mateo to actually contribute $150,000 to match those funds and start distributing relief to impacted community members and businesses ahead of FEMA. And then just recently, the city of San Mateo, we unanimously approved a $3 million appropriation of our to help improve our infrastructure to become more climate resilient ahead of El Nino season, knowing that that there has been years of let's say deferred maintenance and upgrades to our infrastructure. We have infrastructure that's over 50 years old, and things like our stormwater system are tragically inadequate to meet the needs of today, and certainly that of tomorrow and the future, and to protect future generations. And so what we collectively need to come to is solutions that will bring dedicated funding to support infrastructure improvements to become more climate resilient. And nobody wants to eat their vegetables, and I certainly I certainly like to have my cake and eat it too, but the reality is that if we are going to stay healthy as a community and have a safe and protected future to run businesses, live in our homes, and enjoy our lives in our communities, we have to realize that the bill has come due, and that we need to make significant changes and investments to protect our way of life and our communities, and keep us all safe. And so I'm really happy to share that, Community Coalition in San Mateo is calling for action and is joining together to run a ballot initiative that will create a locally controlled, dedicated source of funding to build out stormwater infrastructure that will make San Mateo more climate resilient. And what I've seen in my years on the council is that when San Mateo, it's the largest city in the county, when we go first, other cities follow, and the opportunity to create a dedicated source of revenue to improve stormwater infrastructure and protect residents and businesses from flooding. You know, this is a really significant climate change policy that that every voter and property owner really has a chance to make a statement about. And what I've found is that, fortunately, in our you know, in our city, people believe in science, and people really understand that that climate resiliency and environmental sustainability are values that we hold dear. You know, part of our vision in the city of San Mateo is to be a leader in climate resilience. And so, you know, I feel a lot of confidence in our community embracing these kinds of initiatives, knowing that, you know, that the alternative could be really devastating. And that when we act in a values aligned way, backed by science and good information, that, you know, that we really do protect our way of life.
As we run toward the end of our program, one more question. As I mentioned earlier, you are the first Asian woman and Jew of color to hold the office of San Mateo, Mayor of San Mateo. Being the first, there's always challenges that you have to overcome, but I'd like to ask you to provide some advice to young people, in particular young women, about the journey that you travel to assume the office of mayor. What advice would you give them as they undertake challenges and overcome those particular challenges and barriers?
I think that for a lot of young women, and especially young women of color, when there's no model out there, right? When you never see somebody, or it's hard to find somebody that looks like you, that has your shared experience, that's in a position of leadership, it's hard to see it and see yourself in it, right? And so, you know, my invitation to young women out there is to take the first step, because a lot of us are still breaking through the glass ceiling and the bamboo ceiling. And if we don't cross those thresholds first, if we don't have the courage to beat down the path, you know, then it's going to take even longer to get there. And so I really have taken up the charge of laying the bricks and beating down the path for other people. And sometimes you have to take really hard hits to do it, but it's a labor of love. And it is, you know, it is something that I know I will be, I'm doing, you know, at great sacrifice sometimes, but I'm doing it for all of them and all of those young women out there, so that it won't be as hard for them when they come and when their time is. And so, you know, that's how I see it. I know that there are a lot of women that have come before me that have made my my job easier and opened doors and opportunities that would not have been open if it weren't for their work. And so every time we have the courage to take those first steps, that's our legacy. And that is our gift to the generations that will come after us.
I want to thank you, Mayor Lee, for being a guest.
Thank you so much. It was great talking to you.
I'm Bob Franklin. I'll be back next week with 30 more minutes of good conversation on another edition of Like It Is.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.